This document is called Speaking TV Programme Guides, Would They Help People with Visual Impairments and Are They Feasible? And it's published by Ofcom, the publication date being the 10th of July 2014 and the closing date for responses being the 8th of September 2014. So, about this document. Almost 2 million people have visual impairments that make it difficult or impossible for them to use on-screen TV programme guides, though watching TV remains important to them. This call for inputs seeks views from interested parties, particularly visually impaired viewers, and TV service providers on whether televisions and set-top boxes allowing visually impaired viewers to hear the information in on-screen program guides could make it much easier for them to use such guides for the same purposes as other viewers. Other aids offered by TV service providers as an alternative to speaking program guides may help some visually impaired TV viewers, but could be difficult to use and expensive to afford for many visually impaired viewers. And TV service providers such as Sky, Virgin, TalkTalk and BT TV could include speaking TV guides in the next generation of their set-top boxes, and Freeview, Freesat and Uview could require that manufacturers licensed to make retail products with their branding do likewise. We would also like TV service providers and others with expertise to tell us what they think are the remaining barriers to introducing speaking program guides in the next generation of receivers. This document is available on Ofcom's website in a version, portable document format or PDF, which is compatible with most screen readers. We've also prepared an audio version of this document. If you would like this document in an alternative format or other languages, you can call our advisory team from Monday to Friday between 9 in the morning and 5 in the afternoon on 020 7981 3040 or 0300 123 3333. If you are deaf or speech impaired, you can use our text phone numbers, which are 020 7981 3043 or 0300 123 2024. We will consider all reasonable requests. We'll explain in Annex 1 how you can respond to this document, including by phone, if you would find that more convenient.
Page 2.
Now, the table of contents is on page 2, and it says that Section 1, the summary, will start on page 3. Section 2, legal framework and background, starts on page 6. Section 3, EPG accessibility features, starts page 14. And Section 4, what are the barriers to speaking EPGs, that starts on page 26. And then Annex 1, responding to this call for inputs, is on page 28.
Page 3.
Section 1, summary. Call for inputs. 1.1. In this call for inputs, Ofcom is seeking the views of interested parties, in particular of visually impaired viewers and TV service providers, on the benefits of and scope for on-screen programme guides, often known as electronic programme guides or EPGs, that can read out programme information. Please send us your response by the 8th of September. Annex 1 explains how this can be done. Many people who are blind or visually impaired can find EPGs on television difficult or impossible to use. 1.2. Most TV viewers are familiar with the on-screen programme guides, or EPGs, that come with our digital TV services, whether provided by Freeview, Freesat, Sky, Virgin, BT or TalkTalk. On average, people watch just over 4 hours of TV a day, and these guides play an important part in helping viewers choose live programmes, make recordings, and select catch-up or other on-demand content to view. And there's a note here that that comes from the Communication Market Report, United Kingdom Ofcom, dated August 2013. 1.3. Most of us take these EPGs for granted. However, as we explain in Section 2, an estimated 1.8 million blind or visually impaired people in the UK can find it difficult or impossible to use EPGs, even though they watch just as much TV as everyone else. The number of people with sight problems is projected to increase as the UK population ages. 1.4. Those who find it difficult or impossible to use EPGs are unlikely to benefit fully from the wide range of broadcast programming now available, even though much of it is audio described. As EPGs become an important gateway to online content, such as live-streamed TV channels and on-demand films, the gap between the benefits available to those with and without visual impairments is likely to widen significantly. Ofcom has a duty to require EPG providers to make their EPGs accessible. 1.5. Recognising the importance of EPGs to consumers, Parliament gave Ofcom a duty, explained in Section 2, to provide guidance on the practices to be followed in the provision of EPGs. These practices must include the incorporation of such features as Ofcom considers appropriate for ensuring that people with disabilities affecting their sight or hearing, or both, may use EPGs for the same purposes as other people, so far as practicable.
Page 4.
1.6. To this end, Ofcom's Code of Practice on Electronic Programme Guides requires EPG providers, amongst other things, to, quote, make such adjustments to their EPGs as are practicable to secure that they can be used by people with disabilities affecting their sight or hearing for all the same purposes as they are used by other people. 1.7. The practices we can require extend only to the use of EPGs in relation to the listing or promotion of programmes included in programmes services, TV channels, not to programmes included in catch-up or other on-demand services. However, given our duties, our other duties, also summarised in Section 2, we want to encourage relevant parties to ensure that those parts of EPGs that provide a gateway to catch-up and other on-demand services are also accessible to people with visual impairments. We think speaking EPGs could be the best way of helping people with visual impairments to make better use of program guides. 1.8. EPG providers have already incorporated a variety of accessibility features in their EPGs, including features that allow high contrast displays, a choice of colours for background and text, the ability to magnify text, and audible cues for programmes with audio description. Some have also developed apps that can be used with mobile devices, such as phones or tablets, to voice information about TV programmes and control some aspects of the TV. We summarise these in Section 3. Ofcom's understanding is that these features are helpful to some people with visual impairments, but do not meet the needs of all, particularly those with no useful vision, and those with restricted vision who may struggle to afford or use unfamiliar devices. 1.9. Ofcom has considered whether there may be scope for EPG providers to do more to improve the usability of their EPGs. In particular, we have sought to assess the potential for speaking EPGs, having regard to commercial and technological developments, and to the discussions we have had with several of the leading EPG providers. We have also considered representations from the Royal National Institute of Blind People, the RNIB. 1.10. On the basis of information gathered so far, Ofcom considers that A, including features in EPGs that allow text to be voiced, so-called text-to-speech or TTS, may make it much easier for people with visual impairments to use EPGs for more of the same purposes as sighted people. B, it may now be practicable for providers to incorporate such features in future versions of their EPGs. And C, ancillary devices and applications that some EPG providers are offering as an alternative are likely to be helpful to some visually impaired TV viewers, but may be difficult to use and expensive to afford for many visually impaired viewers, so may not be adequate substitutes.
Page 5.
1.11. We now wish to seek evidence and comments in relation to these provisions. We would welcome your views and any evidence you can provide. 1.12. Ofcom would welcome responses from any people or organisations with an interest in this issue, in particular from visually impaired TV viewers and EPG providers. We have asked some specific questions in this document, but would also welcome any other comments in relation to the issues considered in this document. Annex 1 explains how you can respond to this document, including by phone, if you would find that more convenient.
Page 6.
Section 2. legal framework and background. Introduction. 2.1. In this section, we set out some context for the call for inputs, including A, the duties placed upon Ofcom and requirements imposed on EPG providers in relation to the accessibility and usability of EPGs, B, the estimated number and circumstances of people with visual impairments and the range of conditions leading to sight loss, and C, the particular circumstances of older people who account for the majority of those with visual impairments. Duties of Ofcom and requirements imposed on EPG providers. Statutory provisions. 2.2. Ofcom has specific duties in relation to the accessibility of EPGs, set out in Section 310 of the Communications Act 2003, heretofore known as the Act. In particular, these are to draw up and, from time to time, review and revise a code giving guidance as to the practices to be followed in the provision of electronic program guides, Section 310, Subsection 1. 2.3. Section 310, Subsection 3 provides that the practices to be required by the code must include the incorporation of such features in electronic program guides as Ofcom considers appropriate for securing that persons with disabilities affecting their sight or hearing or both, A, are able, so far as practicable, to make use of such guides for all the same purposes as persons without such disabilities, and B, are informed about and are able to make use of whatever assistance for disabled people is provided in relation to the programmes listed or promoted. 2.4. Ofcom's duties under Section 310 do not extend to improving the usability of EPGs in relation to non-broadcast content. However, Section 10 of the Act gives Ofcom a duty to take such steps and to enter into such arrangement as appears to it calculated to encourage others to secure A, that domestic electronic communications apparatus is developed which is capable of being used with ease and without modification by the widest possible range of individuals, including those with disabilities, and B, that domestic electronic communications apparatus which is capable of being so used is as widely available as possible for acquisition by those wishing to use it.
Page 7.
2.5. Section 10 also says that Ofcom has a duty from time to time to review whether further steps are needed or further arrangements should be entered into for the purpose of performing the duty summarised above. 2.6. In carrying out its duties, Ofcom must have regard to a range of factors set out in Section 3 of the Act, including the needs of persons with disabilities, of the elderly, and of those on low incomes, Section 3, Subsection 4, Paragraph 1. Further, under Section 3, Subsection 5, in furthering the interests of consumers, Ofcom must have regard, in particular, to the interests of those consumers in respect of choice, price, quality of service, and value for money. Ofcom's Code on Electronic Programme Guides. 2.7. Paragraph 6 of Ofcom's Code on Electronic Programme Guides, the Code, known from now on, and you can get that Code on Electronic Programme Guides from Ofcom, and it's on their website. This sets out general principles with which EPG providers must comply. Amongst these is a requirement, in particular, to make such adjustments to their EPGs as are practicable to secure that they can be used by people with disabilities affecting their sight or hearing for all the same purposes as they are used by other people. 2.8. Paragraph 7 of the Code says that Ofcom expects EPG providers to consult disability groups about the way they meet their obligations under the Code. 2.9. Paragraph 8 of the Code notes that much of the functionality of EPGs is dependent upon set-top box hardware and software, as well as the data made available by broadcasters, but makes clear that Ofcom expects the needs of people with disabilities affecting their sight or hearing to be an integral part of planning for the future development of EPGs. 2.10. In Section 4, we discuss the accessibility features that are already incorporated in EPGs, including some with text-to-speech. People with visual impairments. The number of people with visual impairments is significant and expected to grow. 2.11. Research undertaken by Access Economics estimated the prevalence of visual impairment in the UK population by age, gender and ethnicity in 2008. And that was a report called The Economic Impact of Partial Sight and Blindness in the UK Adult Population, published July 2009 by Access Economics. And that is available on the RNIB website at rnib.org.uk. Now, on this basis, it was estimated that 1.8 million people had partial sight or blindness in 2008, of whom 1.13 million, 63% of them, were female, and 664,000, 37%, were male. About 218,000 people were estimated to have no sight, of whom 64.3%, 140,000, were female, and 78,000, 35.7%, were male. 2.12. The research found that there are people of all ages with visual impairments, but that the group is skewed heavily towards older people. The research suggested that of the estimated 1.8 million blind and partially sighted people in the UK in 2008, just under a quarter were under 65 years old, and more than three quarters, 1,378,178, were 65 or older. These numbers excluded the many more people who can see reasonably well with prescription lenses, but who may struggle when reading an EPG.
Page 8.
2.13. Applying these prevalence rates to future population projections, the research also estimated how the numbers of people might change over the next few decades. On this basis, the total of those with partial sight and blindness in the UK was projected to grow to 2,262,124 by 2020 and to over 4 million by 2050. And that comes from the report The Economic Impact of Partial Sight and Blindness in the UK Adult Population, July 2009, Access Economics, page 45. You can get that on the rnib.org.uk website as well. Much of this would be driven by the UK's ageing population, leading to an increase in the number of people with age-related macular degeneration and cataracts. Visual impairment has many causes. 2.14, the five main causes of visual impairment are age-related macular degeneration, cataracts, diabetic retinopathy, glaucoma, and refractive errors. Taking those one at a time. A. Age-related macular degeneration, AMD, is an incurable eye disease and a leading cause of blindness in all older people. AMD occurs with degeneration of the macula, which is the part of the retina that enables central vision and seeing fine detail. Damage to the macula results in central vision loss. According to the Access Economics research, people with AMD accounted for 16.7% of all those who are blind or partially sighted, and a higher proportion of those who are blind rather than partially sighted. B. Cataracts, formed from clumps of protein on the surface of the eye's lens that have the effect of scattering light, can result in clouding of a small area of the lens. Over time, the cataract may grow and cloud more of the lens, making it hard to see. They often occur in older people. People with cataracts comprise 13.7% of the blind and partially sighted. Glaucoma is a group of diseases that can lead to damage to the eye's optic nerve and result in blindness. Glaucoma accounts for 5.3% of those who are blind or partially sighted. That's C. Moving on to D, diabetes retinopathy, DR, is a complication that can arise from diabetes, a group of metabolic diseases in which a person has high blood sugar. DR can result in microaneurysms of the tiny blood vessels inside the retina. As the disease progresses, some blood vessels that nourish the retina are blocked, causing vision loss. People with DR account for 3.5% of those who are blind or partially sighted. And finally, E, in their more extreme forms, irreversible refractive errors, i.e. short or long sightedness, can result in profound sight loss, including blindness that cannot be corrected with refractive lenses. People with refractive errors account for 53.5% of those who are blind or partially sighted.
Page 9.
2.15, less common conditions such as neuro-ophthalmic disorders, their main disorders in children, retinitis pigmentosa and other retinal conditions account for the remaining prevalence of partial sight and blindness, and these all account for 7.4% of those who are blind or partially sighted. TV is important to blind and visually impaired people. A male TV viewer reported in an introduction to voice guidance on Panasonic talking TVs. That's from a YouTube video, and you can go to YouTube to watch that. He said, contrary to what people might think, blind and partially sighted people do watch a lot of TV, and I would certainly put myself in that category. A survey commissioned by Ofcom in 2006 found that blind and visually impaired people watched more television than those without sight impairments. That was at a time when, on average, UK residents were watching about 3.46 hours a day. Those with visual impairments were watching 3.8 hours of television a day. And that's Provision of Access Services, a research study conducted for Ofcom, published by Ofcom March 2006, available on the Ofcom website. Now, for a number of reasons, this is hardly surprising. A. Many will have watched television regularly before their sight became impaired and will not want to give up a familiar and enjoyable pastime. B. Many will live in a household with sighted people and will want to share in the same activities. C. Many television programmes have a significant audio component, e.g. news, and can be followed without vision. Some are accompanied by audio description, a narrative fitting in with the main dialogue explaining what's happening on screen. D. People with visual impairments are likely to have more leisure time than those without. Many are of retirement age, others may be unemployed. Older people, in particular, are likely to have more leisure time than people of working age, but have less money to spend on leisure activities and be less able to engage in physically demanding activities. And E. Television helps people cope with social isolation, to which older people are prone. Between 30% to 40% of older people in the UK live alone. That's from Eurostat, the Social Situation in the European Union, 2005-2006, edition April 2006. 14% of them have no living children, according to Young, Harriet and Grundy, Emily, 2008, Longitudinal Perspectives on Caregiving, Employment History and Marital Status in Midlife in England and Wales, by the Health and Social Care in the Community, Section 16, Subsection 4, and the ISSN number for that is 1365-2522. Now that's page is 388 to 399, incidentally. Moving back to the main text, some older people are effectively housebound for much of the day.
Page 10.
Despite this, most people who are blind or visually impaired are likely to find using a conventional EPG difficult or impossible. How different levels of sight loss affect vision? 2.17. The extent of sight loss amongst those who are visually impaired varies considerably. Those with profound sight loss cannot tell by the light where the windows are. Those with severe sight loss, 12%, cannot see well enough to recognise a friend close to his or her face. Those with moderate visual impairments, 25%, cannot see well enough to recognise a friend across the room or to read a large print book. Most people who are blind or visually impaired are categorised as having mild sight loss, 63% in fact. But as this cannot be corrected by lenses, even they may not recognise a friend across the road and will face difficulty seeing buttons on a remote control or seeing the picture on a TV screen. 2.18. Thus, even those with mild visual impairments would face considerable difficulties in using a conventional EPG. In effect, they must work much harder than viewers without sight impairments to decipher and use on-screen information. Depending on the amount and type of vision they have, they may have to A. sit very close to the screen and use magnification to be able to read information in an EPG, B. spend longer scanning the screen because of their limited field of vision, and C. concentrate much harder to work out what they need to know based on the limited amount of information they can glean. Ofcom's Round Table. 2.19. To improve our understanding of how visual impairment affects people's use of EPGs, Ofcom convened a round table with visually impaired people in April 2014. The round table was also attended by the major EPG providers, Sky, Virgin, UView, Freesat and Digital UK, which manages the Freeview EPG, and by groups representing the interests of blind and visually impaired people, the RNIB, the Macular Society and the Royal Blind and Scottish War Blinded Charity. 2.20. The visually impaired people at the round table talked about their experience of using or not using EPGs to find out about TV programmes as well as other means of finding out what was on TV. 2.21. All found using conventional EPGs either difficult or impossible. One participant reported that his peripheral vision meant that he had to scan and rescan the EPG in order to decipher the information it provided. Figure 1 below gives an impression of what someone with peripheral vision might see.
Page 11.
And the top of page 11 is figure 1, how a screen might appear to someone with central vision loss. And it's a picture of the BBC's webpage. In fact, it's actually a photograph of a computer screen, but it doesn't matter. It's a picture of the BBC's iPlayer webpage. And you can see all the things around the edge of the screen, but in the middle, it's like there's a big dark splodge of smoke obscuring all vision in the central portion of the screen. 2.22. Another participant explained that although she was able to, with difficulty, to see portions of the EPG, she found the whole process too onerous and instead used her laptop computer to find and view films and TV programmes, even though she would have preferred to watch programmes on a larger TV screen. 2.23. The use of speaking mobile phone apps to find out about TV programmes was also demonstrated. Those who were tech-savvy found them a useful tool. However, they also felt that the complexity of the layered menus, which were not always intuitive, would make them difficult for some people to use. 2.24. A few participants had used speaking EPGs, explained in more detail in section 3, and those who had not encountered them hoped that they could become more generally available. 2.25. Industry representatives at the round table explained some of the measures that had been taken to help people with some sight to use EPGs and the work that was planned to make EPG apps for mobile devices easier to use. However, it was recognised that these would not be suitable for everybody and that many would find speaking EPGs helpful. Technology did not pose a particular constraint to the introduction of speaking EPGs, although some existing platforms might be subject to technical constraints, at least in the short term. However, the main barrier was commercial. The incentives on manufacturers and service providers to enable speaking EPGs were quite weak, as other features would produce a better commercial return. 2.26. It's clear that the difficulties encountered by some people with partial sight are enough to discourage some people from attempting to use conventional EPGs. A study in 2002 on how blind and partially sighted viewers used EPGs found that most participants relied on family or friends to tell them what was on TV or on their memory of when certain programmes, for example soaps, were on TV. Alternatively, they might browse through different channels. And that's from Mark David Rice's A Study of Television and Visual Impairment, Prospects for the Accessibility of Interactive Television, published 2002.
Page 12.
2.27. However, some blind or visually impaired people must cope by themselves. Research suggests that there are some 123,000 households in the UK, including people with severe, mild or moderate sight loss that do not include a sighted adult. And that's from Study on Access to Smart Meter Benefits for Blind and Partially Sighted Consumers, SQW, in partnership with i2 Media Research and Astutim, March 2013. That's available from the website www.gov.uk. 2.28. The net result is likely to be that many viewers with visual impairments face a restricted choice of viewing. Indeed, a survey carried out in 2008 found that people with visual impairments who could not see the EPG tended to watch a more limited repertoire of channels than others. They relied heavily on memorising channel numbers and had to relearn them when the channels were reordered. And that comes from People with Visual Impairments and Communication Services, July 2008, Ofcom, available on the Ofcom website. This was echoed in the discussion at Ofcom's round table. Some people can find other ways of substituting for conventional EPGs, but older viewers face additional barriers to coping with sight loss. 2.29. The impact of visual impairment will also vary according to the personal circumstances of each person. Some people who were born with visual impairments or acquire them early on in life have grown up with the use of assistive devices. As a result, they may be adept at making use of the text-to-speech facilities offered by computers equipped with screen reading software and the variety of other devices, including some smartphones. At Ofcom's round table, a blind person demonstrated how a smartphone app can be used to find out information about TV programmes, but also how complex and non-intuitive this process might be for most people. 2.30. Older people, who comprise the large majority of those with visual impairments, can face additional barriers to coping with sight loss. A. Those who have retired and rely upon pensions may be unable to afford devices incorporating assistive technology. And the note there is a recent report suggests the average pension pot is under £37,000 and that this would generate a retirement income of just £1,340 a year, resulting in a very modest supplement to the state pension. And that's from Help to Save, Defusing the Pensions Time Bomb by Policy Exchange, published January 2014, available on the policyexchange.org.uk website. Or, returning to the main text, reluctant to risk the expenditure because they're unsure how much it will help. And B, while some remain in full possession of their faculties, and the footnote here is research suggests that the impact of conditions and impairments associated with very old age and particular types of disability vary widely among those who experience them. Key factors affecting this include the availability or otherwise of family support, the socioeconomic background of the people concerned, and the attitudes towards technology. And that's consumer research with older old consumers and those living with cognitive, physical and sensory disabilities by Toynbee Hall, September 2012. Returning to the main text, older people often experience a decline in some of their abilities, including visual and auditory perception, attention span, memory, motor functions and touch, and speech production. The footnote is that's from Sky, KW 1990, Intellectual Development in Adulthood, and it's in J.E. Birren and K.W. Sky, the editor's Handbook of the Psychology of Aging, 3rd edition, pages 291 to 309, published in New York by Academic Press.
Page 13.
2.31. There are other, less obvious barriers. For example, it's not unusual for people of all generations to take time to confront the reality of permanent sight impairment and to adopt coping strategies. One younger participant in Ofcom's roundtable explained that it took a long time to come to terms with sight loss. Older people may lack confidence in their ability to master unfamiliar technology and may even be unwilling to try it out, either because they fear wasted expenditure or because they don't want to risk failure.
Page 14.
Now we come to Section 3, EPG Accessibility Features. Introduction. 3.1. Many EPGs already incorporate features for people with visual impairments. In this section, we summarise A, the relevant accessibility features in EPGs offered by the most popular TV services, both subscription and free-to-air, and B, EPGs and TV programme guides that use text-to-speech, whether integrated into TV receivers, both TVs and set-top boxes, or made available through secondary devices, such as the Sky Talker, or apps for smartphones and tablets. Accessibility features on EPGs on most popular TV platforms. And the footnote here is as of April 2014. Returning to the main text. 3.2. The table below identifies the main accessibility features on the most popular TV platforms, both subscription and free-to-air. And decoding the Figure 2, the EPG accessibility features in the most popular TV services. I can tell you that it's best to run down the different services and the features that they have. So starting with Sky, which is based on the Sky Digibox, Sky Plus, Sky HD, Sky Plus HD, the Thompson box, Sky Plus HD, B-Sky, B-Pace and Samsung boxes. They don't have a high contrast EPG. They have access to audio description. The AD setting is in a menu, AD activation from information bar and help button on the remote control. You can't change the AD volume. You can highlight AD content in EPG, and other features are audio signal that's beep on AD content. Virgin TiVo Box and V Plus HD, you don't have a high contrast EPG. They do have an AD setting, that audio description setting, in the menu. AD activation is from the information bar on the TiVo. You can't change the AD volume. You can't highlight AD content in the EPG. And other features include audio cues, sounds that show actions and reactions to button presses on the remote control of the TiVo. Now, BTTV. It doesn't have a high contrast EPG. The AD settings are in the menu, AD button on remote control as well. You can change the volume of the alternate dialogue, the audio description. It's in the accessibility settings on BTTV. You cannot highlight AD content in the EPG, though, and there are no other features in this department to mention about. Then we go on to UView and UView Plus for BTTV. There is a high contrast EPG. You get it in the accessibility settings. Audio description activation is from information bar, and there's an AD button on the remote control. You can change the AD volume. It's in accessibility settings. You can't highlight AD content in the EPG, and there are other features. The zoom button on the remote control to make menus and guides bigger. Moving over to Freeview now, and this is, for example, the Goodman's SmartTalk set-top box. There are some boxes that allow a high contrast EPG. For example, the Goodman's SmartTalk set-top box, it says here at the bottom of the page. All Freeview HD products have audio description. You can change the AD volume only on products capable of premix audio description. And that's from Access Services for Digital Television, France de Jong, October 2004. You cannot highlight AD content in the EPG, and there are no other features mentioned in this table for Freeview. And then FreeSat, finally, including FreeTime. Some, including FreeTime boxes, which allow changes to transparency of dialogue boxes, that gives you can give you high contrast EPG. And the source for that is Humax Foxsat HDR User Manual. All FreeSat products have access to audio description, and that's from Accessibility by FreeSat themselves, available at freesat.co.uk. You can't change the audio description volume. You cannot highlight audio description content in the EPG, and there are no other features mentioned in the table.
Page 15.
Now we come to speaking EPGs. 3.3. Both Panasonic and Samsung now offer televisions equipped with speaking EPGs. These allow viewers to use the up and down and OK buttons on their remote controls to navigate EPG menus. When an item is selected, see example in figure 3 below, the text is read out. The same applies to menus, including channel listings, program details and accessibility settings.
Page 16.
And there is indeed a figure 3, a screenshot of a Panasonic television showing an on-screen menu of text-to-speech options. And it shows that the text-to-speech options can be set in the accessibility settings to beginner. Presumably there's also advanced and maybe other options in there. Text-to-speech speed can be set, text-to-speech volume can be set, and text-to-speech audio mix can be set. For example, the one here on screen says quiet background audio. Returning to the main text now. 3.4. Speaking EPGs are also available in set-top boxes manufactured under the TV-Onyx and Goodman brands in the UK. That's from Goodman's Smart Talk Freeview Box in Witch, November 2010. And the Bush, that's from the Bush BHA-S03 set-top box. And Hills, that's from Hills Talking set-top box, from www.hillsantenna.com.au. Brands in Australia, which were made available to eligible households at the time of digital switchover in Australia. 3.5. Each of these set-top boxes has similar features. The TV-Onyx box, for example, offers a fully accessible EPG, enabling visually impaired viewers to find out what's on and to record and playback programmes. It also enables access to settings menus, e.g. to set parental controls and retune the receiver. The box uses natural-sounding synthesised speech, which can be adjusted to 5 different speeds and can also be set to cut down the amount of information read out once users are familiar with it. 3.6. None of the set-top boxes currently available with pay TV services in the UK are equipped with speaking EPGs. Now, user feedback. 3.7. A blind television viewer demonstrated at Ofcom's round table how he was able to use TTS to navigate different levels of the EPG on his Panasonic television. He had been unable to use conventional EPGs, but was now able to use the TTS-enabled EPG to find out what was going on and to turn on audio description. He particularly valued the independence that a speaking EPG provided.
Page 17.
3.8. Similar sentiments were expressed by a blind TV viewer reviewing the Panasonic for RNIB's website. The male TV viewer in Get the Picture, Making Television Easier for People with Sight Loss, published by RNIB and available on the RNIB website, said, "The text-to-speech is really important because, again, I don't have enough sight to be able to see the text on screen. So if I don't have speech in the television to tell me what channel I'm watching or what's coming up next on the electronic programme guide, I'm really kind of fumbling around in the dark." 3.9. A viewer with partial vision also found this feature useful. She said, a female TV viewer with central vision loss said, "I have central vision loss and I'm reviewing my new Panasonic TV with voice guidance. I am by no means a techie type, but I did find the setting up straightforward. Once the voice guidance is set up, you use your TV like any other. The difference is you have far more control, information and choice. It's absolutely brilliant to be able to surf the channels and hear what channel you're on, what program is showing and what programs are coming up." And that's number 27, footnote, Panasonic Television with Voice Guidance, Steph Cutler, September 2012, also available on the RNIB website. 3.10. The same viewer welcomed the fact that the software is built into the mainstream product and has no additional expense or hassle. Participants in Ofcom's roundtable hoped that speaking EPGs would be incorporated in consumer receivers, and a pay TV operator told the roundtable that this view had been echoed by a focus group of visually impaired viewers that it had convened. They preferred the EPG to be accessible through the TV rather than through secondary devices. 3.11. The Australian government commissioned a trial involving customers who were blind or had a vision impairment living in the regional Victoria switchover area, as well as a small control group of sighted scheme customers. Among other things, the research found that A, the survey showed 9 out of 10 respondents, 88%, had adopted the talking remote control as their main remote control unit, and nearly 3/4 of trialists, 71%, rated it as excellent or very good. B, the two most useful functions of the talking set-top boxes were the talking menus, 70% rate these as quite or very useful, and the talking programme guides, 62%, particularly among people with a sight impairment, and even more so amongst those participants in the research that were blind. And C, 2/3 of visually impaired blind or seeing respondents, 67%, said that their enjoyment of watching TV had increased a lot or a bit as a result of receiving the talking set-top box. Amongst visually impaired viewers, the figures were 63%, blind viewers 75%, and seeing viewers
71%. Page 18.
3.12, although this research was conducted in Australia, we see no reason why the findings should not be equally applicable in the UK. Initial assessment of speaking EPGs. 3.13. In the light of feedback from users and lobby groups, Ofcom has identified a number of potential advantages and disadvantages of speaking EPGs incorporated into televisions or set-top boxes. First, the potential advantages. 3.14. Setting up a TTS-enabled EPG may be easier when it's integrated into the TV receiver, whether a set-top box or digital television, than if it requires the user or someone on their behalf to pair a third-party device using Wi-Fi. 3.15, a broader range of visually impaired people may find it easier to use integrated TTS as it can be activated by the remote control, which many will find simpler to use than, say, a touchscreen device such as a smartphone or tablet. In any case, some alternatives, for example SkyTalker and the UView app, still require the user to operate the remote control. 3.16, speaking EPGs integrated into televisions and set-top boxes may be less susceptible to unplanned software changes that may conflict with the speaking EPG, particularly where the EPG provider controls software changes. 3.17, within the last 2 years, TV manufacturers have begun to make integrated speaking EPGs on their mid-range TVs, as well as those at the higher end, and one now makes integrated speaking EPGs in all new TVs. Well, that's the potential advantages. Now the potential disadvantages, starting with 3.18, TV receivers with integrated TTS-enabled EPGs remain relatively expensive. Footnote 28 here says this may change over time if more manufacturers make use of the same chipsets, securing economies of scale, as happened when manufacturers of TV receivers and set-top boxes adopted chipsets that enabled audio description, now standard in most TV equipment. Returning to the main text, although some TVonics and Goodman's branded set-top boxes equipped with speaking EPGs remain, Ofcom understands that they are no longer being manufactured. And 3.19, most speaking EPGs do not have easily accessible instructions and require help from a sighted person to set them up.
Page 19.
Secondary devices. First, the SkyTalker. 3.20. In 2011, Sky launched the SkyTalker, which was developed in association with RNIB. When connected to a Sky box, the SkyTalker can be controlled by the usual remote control. As viewers move through channels, the SkyTalker will announce the channel number, channel name, and program name automatically. The SkyTalker also provides verbal feedback when the Sky Plus pause, play, and rewind buttons on the remote control are used. However, the remote control does not vocalise the EPG, so it does not enable users to hear information about programmes in the future. And then there's a picture of the SkyTalker with its connection cables sitting next to a Sky Plus High Def HD box on a tabletop. 3.21. Nonetheless, some visually impaired viewers clearly value the SkyTalker device. And this is a quote: "It allows me to mooch around and find something that I want to watch. That's a simple pleasure I haven't been able to experience since I lost my sight more than a decade ago. It feels good," says the person in televisions available with talking menu guide from Access India. And it's on the accessindia.org.in website. Mobile devices. 3.22, FreeSat, FreeView, Sky, Virgin, UView have developed apps for installation on devices on certain but not all mobile devices such as smartphones and tablets. Most work with iOS or Android operating systems, but not with other systems. 3.23, the apps are aimed primarily at people without visual impairments and are intended to allow users to A, find out what programs are available to watch, that's in all cases, B, set recordings, in several cases, and C, act as a remote control when paired with the TV or set-top box, in a few cases. 3.24, the apps are compatible to a greater or lesser extent with the TTS facility made available by the mobile device manufacturer. VoiceOver for Apple devices using iOS, TalkBack for devices using the Android operating system. The precise capabilities of the apps and the extent to which they have been adapted for use by people with visual impairments vary from one app to another, and over time as well. The summary in Figure 5 below explains the capabilities offered by the main apps in April 2014, since when some may have changed.
Page 20.
So now we come to Table Figure 5, Text-to-Speech Capabilities in Mobile Device Apps. And this is as of April 2014. So we start with the app for Sky Plus HD. There's no app for older Sky devices, but Sky Plus HD has an app. It's compatible with iOS and some Android. It will read listings, make recordings, and can be used as a remote control with some Sky HD boxes. It's not optimized for text-to-speech. The program grid is not supported. It reads out abbreviations as words and times as numbers. Program information spoken in most views except grid and prog synopsis. Channel number and program title is all that's spoken. And identifies whether AD is available only in program synopsis. Now the Virgin TV Anywhere for TiVo boxes, a Virgin TV guide. It's compatible with iOS and some Android. It will read listings and make recordings and can be used as a remote control with TiVo boxes. It's optimized for text-to-speech. It reads out most information in most views but can't prompt users to insert PIN when required. And program information spoken in most views, program title and channel number. And it does not identify whether AD is available. Now, the Freeview TV Guide app is iOS and some Android. None of these, incidentally, are associated or compatible with BlackBerry, Windows or Nokia, by the way. But so Freeview Guide, iOS and some Android. It's able to read listings and make recordings. The content is arranged in columns, so it's not intuitive. So it's not optimized for text-to-speech. Program information spoken. Well, all info in the single-channel view in and program synopsis, most in top picks, none in favourites, and it does not identify whether AD is available. Now the FreeSat, which only works with HD and FreeTime boxes, the FreeSat app, the compatibility is with iOS only, that's your Apple devices only. It'll read listings. With FreeTime, it allows recordings and can be used as a remote control. It's optimized for text-to-speech. Well, most on-screen buttons do not include labels that can be read by TTS, so the app is largely inaccessible. What about program information spoken? Well, in grid and single channel view, channel number and program title start and finish time, and it doesn't identify whether AD is available. And finally, the UView, TalkTalk, BTTV, UView retail boxes. That includes all of those. This is available for iOS and some Android. It can read listings and make recordings. Optimized for text-to-speech? Well, in most views, program start time and finish, channel title, but not the number. Program information spoken? No. Viewers must dive down to the program synopsis to find out whether AD is available. No access to on-demand content. Identifies whether AD is available? Well, only in the program synopsis.
Page 21.
3.25. It appears that none of the apps are fully optimised for use with text-to-speech. For example, most potential users of the FreeSat app would be thwarted by the absence of TTS-readable labels for the buttons on the home screen of the app. These buttons allow users to switch to different features of the app. When a button with TTS-readable labelling is selected, the TTS facility will explain what features the button provides access to. Without these labels, users would not know what the buttons were for, so would be unable to make progress. Similarly, the Virgin Media apps do not prompt users to insert a PIN when this is required, which would bring the process to a halt. 3.26, it should be noted that performance and capabilities are subject to change as new versions of the apps are developed and as new devices come on the market. User feedback. 3.27, Virgin Media's app, regarded by RNIB, was one of the more accessible. think that's meant to say as one of the more accessible, received some positive feedback from blind users. They said, for a blind person, this app is priceless. For a long time, some of us have had TiVo boxes, but no way to use them. Now that's all changed. I give a thumbs up to Virgin Media for their efforts. I can now access the features of a box I've been paying for that until recently only my sighted wife was able to benefit from properly. And that's for Andre Lewis, an iPhone 4S user whose views were sought by Virgin Media. And you can get that report on actionforblindpeople.org.uk's website. Next, the TV guide was quite accessible. I really liked the simplicity of the layout. I was able to find my way around the TV guide with no difficulty. However, one thing I did note was the inconsistency in button labelling. The absence of button labelling is very important, in particular for less confident voiceover users. If I had not double-tapped the programme, I wouldn't have known that this was the way in which programmes can be set to record. And that was Sonali Rai, a visually impaired staff member of the RNIB, and you can get that report on rnib.org.uk website. Initial assessment of secondary devices. 3.28. In the light of feedback from users and lobby groups, Ofcom has identified a number of potential advantages and disadvantages of TTS-enabled secondary devices.
Page 22.
Potential advantages first. 3.29. UView points out that enabling the EPG to be controlled by a broad range of mobile devices, for example smartphones and tablets, and assistive equipment, for example sip and puff devices for people with disabilities affecting the use of their upper limbs, means that it has the potential to benefit a wider range of people with disabilities than an EPG that simply incorporated TTS. 3.30, Virgin suggested in 2011 that the development of apps that can be used with text-to-speech features on mobile devices, such as VoiceOver on an Apple device or TalkBack on an Android device, would allow for speedier provision of accessibility than would incorporating text-to-speech in a set-top box, which could take 3 years or so. And that's from Ian Meckelberg, Virgin Media, speaking at Streaming Media 2011 in October 2011, available on streamingmediaglobal.com's website. Returning to the main text, 3.31. As SkyTalker is supplied by Sky, it's more likely that Sky will ensure that it remains compatible with its set-top boxes. Although the SkyTalker is reported to be easily installed with the help of a sighted person, Sky will make an engineer available to install and demonstrate the unit if necessary. 3.32, EPG providers can externalise some of the costs of providing TTS by using apps for mobile devices, as TTS functionality is provided by the device manufacturer and the consumer is responsible for purchasing the device. Incorporating TTS in future set-top boxes would require EPG providers to undertake additional development work with little or no prospect of commercial payback. Now the potential disadvantages. 3.33. Visually impaired people must pay for any secondary devices they want, but these may not be affordable to all. Many are likely to be of pensionable age, see Section 3, on modest incomes. People of working age may have relatively small incomes because their visual impairments make it difficult to find well-paid employment, or indeed any job. Compatible mobile devices may not be cheap. And there, for example, it says at the bottom here, UView notes that the UView app for Android has been optimised for the following smartphones: Samsung Galaxy S3, Samsung Galaxy S2, LG Nexus 4, HTC One S, and Samsung Galaxy Ace. Contract-free prices for these smartphones vary from £200 to more than £400. Back to the main text. Unsurprisingly, few people in lower socioeconomic groups own smartphones and tablets than those in higher groups. See figure 6 on the next page.
Page 23.
So now we come to figure 6, which is the take-up of mobile devices by socioeconomic group. Figures are valid from 2012. The year 2012, and the note at the bottom says it's been extracted from Table 4.23 Communications Market Review 2013, published by Ofcom in August 2013, and available on the Ofcom website. So this is a histogram, a bar chart. Figure 6, the take-up of mobile devices by socioeconomic group. and it shows that for smartphones, the take-up is 60% for ABs, 58% for C1s, socioeconomic groups these are, 46% in the C2s, and 38% in the DEs. For tablets, it's 36% in the AB group, 27% in C1s, 20% in C2s, and 13% for DEs. And smart TVs, 12% in AB group, 8% in C1s, 6% in C2s, and 3% in DEs. That's the end of figure 6, returning to the main text. 3.34, possibly for similar reasons, older people are much less likely to own a smartphone. A recent survey found that while only 11% of those aged 65 to 74 and 2% of those aged 75 plus owned smartphones, compared to over three quarters of 16 to 24-year-olds, a report published late last year cited similar findings, indicating that 13% of those aged 65 or more owned smartphones and 5% owned tablets. That report, incidentally, footnote 36, is UK Mobile Insights Report 2013 Quarter 4, an overview of recent research and data on smartphone and tablet ownership in the UK, published November 2013 and available on weareapps.com's website. That's http://weareapps.com, weareapps. Returning to the main text. This suggests that those most likely to have visual impairments are least likely to own a mobile phone or tablet. 3.35. Even those with a smartphone may not have one compatible with relevant apps. At the time of writing, none worked with BlackBerry, Windows, or Nokia mobile devices. Indeed, not all Android devices are compatible. Given the wide and continually changing range of mobile devices, ensuring that TTS-enabled apps work with all of these is, in practice, almost impossible. For example, Virgin Media's app only works on selected devices. Virgin TV Anywhere on Android devices. That's a report available on store.virginmedia.com. And back, returning to the main text, Virgin Media's app only works on selected devices, though the company says that it is continuing to work on making it compatible with a wider range. And the footnote there is TV Anywhere Android device support requests, published by Virgin Media, available on the website community.virginmedia.com. 3.36. One of the reasons why this is a time-consuming process is that manufacturers of Android devices often choose to customize the Android software. Customization can interfere with the ability to load Android apps from Google's Play Store, and also with accessibility features built into Android. For example, says the RNIB, a number of e-readers are so heavily customized that Android's accessibility is effectively neutered.
Page 24.
3.37. Of the visually impaired who may have a suitable mobile device, many may not be aware that relevant TTS-enabled apps are available. Research suggests that amongst older people, there is very little understanding of the range of applications available. And the footnote here is that's from Consumer Research with Older Old Consumers and Those Living with Cognitive, Physical and Sensory Disabilities, published by the Payments Council, page 25, in September 2012, and available on paymentscouncil.org.uk website. Returning to the main text, though, many have virtually no experience of mobile applications, and many were not comfortable even with texting. One quote here, I don't understand apps and things like this on mobile phones. I'm afraid I think the more technology they introduce, the more complicated it becomes rather than easier. Again, you know, using these apps as an example, I mean, they're beyond me. And that is footnote 40. It says IBID at the bottom. 3.38. Most EPGs with integrated text-to-speech can be operated using a limited number of buttons on a remote control. In some cases, this can be done by voice command. By contrast, most secondary devices, smartphones and tablets, use touch screens. Ofcom's understanding is that they can be particularly difficult for older people, who constitute the majority of people with visual impairments. 3.39, some research suggests that older adults face obstacles to using information technology appliances for two main reasons. Firstly, declining memory and or cognitive control functions, which make learning difficult. The footnote there is that's from Head and Trey and Gabrielli, John D.E., Insights into the Aging Mind, a View from Cognitive Neuroscience, and it's from Nature Reviews Neuroscience 5, page 87 to 96, published February 2004, available at nature.com's website. Returning to the main text, secondly, prejudicial attitudes towards information technology systems that may make them feel they cannot learn how to use them. And that's from How Can We Make IT Appliances Easy for Older Adults? Usability Studies of Electronic Program Guide System, Norio Hara, Toshiya Naka and Etsuko T. Harada, published December 2009, available from www.intechopen.com, their website. That's footnote 42, returning to the main text. Indeed, it is clear from some blogs used by technically literate blind users that even they find some ancillary devices too complex to use easily. Footnote 43 here says, any time you start talking about the Android OS as it relates to the visually impaired community, the same thing always comes up, the complexity of it all. This phone works really well, this doesn't. This one doesn't at first, but if you add this and take this away, install this, you're going to have to uninstall this preloaded software. Honestly, it's quite ridiculous, said one blogger, #12anonymouse. I have to agree completely. The source here is my experience with an Android product and my return to the iPhone, from appleviz.com, 24th of October 2013, available from appleviz, that's appleviz.com, in their forums. Returning to the main text, 3.40, secondary devices often have more limited functionality than conventional EPGs and do not provide access to all the information that would be provided in an EPG. See figure 5 above. The SkyTalker, for example, does not read out text from most of the EPG, nor does it replace the need to use a TV remote control to operate the EPG.
Page 25.
3.41, input sort. Ofcom would welcome views from respondents on any of the issues raised in this paper or pertinent to the issue of accessibility to EPGs for people with visual impairments. Ofcom would particularly welcome the views of people with visual impairments and groups representing their interests on the issues raised below. Question 1. Do respondents agree with Ofcom's initial assessment that apps for mobile devices have the potential to be useful for those people with visual impairments who feel confident using touchscreen technology and can afford a suitable mobile device? If not, why not? Question 2. Do respondents agree with Ofcom's initial assessment that apps for mobile devices are less likely to meet the needs of the majority of visually impaired people who are 65 or older, both because they're less likely either to own a suitable mobile phone and because touchscreen apps represent a number of actual and perceived barriers to use? And if not, why not? Question 3. Do respondents consider that it would be reasonable for visually impaired viewers to pay more than sighted viewers for the ability to use EPGs or substitutes for the same purposes as sighted viewers? If so, why? Question 4. Do respondents agree with Ofcom's initial assessment that the speaking EPGs integrated into TVs and set-top boxes may be easier for people with visual impairments to use than touchscreen apps? And if not, why not?
Page 26.
Section 4. What are the barriers to speaking EPGs? Introduction. 4.1. In this section, we consider the progress that's been made towards overcoming the barriers to adopting text-to-speech for EPGs. We also invite views on remaining barriers to implementation and how these might be overcome. Progress towards facilitating text-to-speech capability in EPGs. 4.2. Ofcom's understanding is that many of the barriers to the adoption of text-to-speech for EPGs have now been surmounted. In particular, Ofcom notes that A, there are now widely accepted technical standards. The Digital TV Group, which comprises manufacturers, broadcasters and organisations representing sensory impaired viewers, has completed a technical specification for text-to-speech, which was later adopted by Digital Europe and taken up to the International Electrotechnical Commission, the IEC. Now, this led led to the IEC setting up a project group and creating international standard IEC 62731:2013 text-to-speech for television general requirements. Now, IEC 62731:2013 specifies the text-to-speech functionality for digital television receivers such as set-top boxes, integrated digital TVs, recorders and other products whose primary function is to receive TV content. And that's from text-to-speech for television general requirement International Electrotechnical Commission, available on webstore.iec.ch website. B, the underlying technology is now widely available and can be licensed as middleware applications from a number of suppliers, such as Ocean Blue, Nuance and Wizard, or developed from readily available open source software available from the web. The technology can be embodied in middleware on a range of chipsets obtainable from a variety of suppliers, including STMicroelectronics, RC Systems and Toshiba. C. The technology is not expensive. AT&T researchers have demonstrated the ability to provide an EPG with voice recognition and text-to-speech using commodity hardware and software to reduce barriers to entry. And that's from EPG Speech Access to Program Guides for People with Disabilities by Michael Johnston and Amanda Stent, October 2010, available from www.research.att.com. Now, industry sources have told Ofcom that chipsets incorporating text-to-speech are available at a modest premium to chipsets without this capability. Ofcom notes that text-to-speech technology has been incorporated in a wide range of modestly priced consumer devices, often as an ancillary rather than a mainstream feature. And D, text-to-speech is a relatively mature technology that has been successfully deployed in a growing range of specialist and consumer devices, including screen readers used by people with visual impairments to read computer screens, both as separate products and bundled with popular computer operating systems, as well as TVs, set-top boxes, smartphones, tablets, and e-books. Early versions that produced robotic synthesized outputs have been succeeded by those using more natural-sounding speech.
Page 27.
What are the remaining barriers to implementation? 4.3, Ofcom would welcome input from TV service providers, both subscription and free-to-air, manufacturers, technology providers and others with relevant expertise on any remaining barriers to implementation and how these might be overcome. In particular, question 5, do pay TV service providers such as Sky, Virgin, TalkTalk and BT TV see additional obstacles that would prevent them from committing to including text-to-speech capabilities in the next planned upgrades to the receivers they offer to subscribers? If so, what are these obstacles? Absent regulation, would these obstacles make it impossible on commercial grounds to commit the necessary investment? Question 6. If the cost of providing speech-enabled receivers to all those who subscribe to particular pay TV services would entail a substantial delay to the rollout of such receivers to all subscribers, would it be feasible, quicker and more cost-effective to offer suitable equipment first to viewers with visual impairments? Question 7. Do respondents consider it would be reasonable to expect visually impaired viewers to pay extra for equipment that allows them to use EPGs or substitutes for the same purposes as sighted viewers? If so, why? Question 8. Do licensors, such as Freesat and Freeview, see obstacles to using their leverage to require manufacturers to incorporate speaking EPGs in future versions of their branded products, such as Freetime and Freeview Connect? Question 9. What are the main types of costs that pay TV service providers would face in incorporating speaking EPG features into the next generation of their set-top boxes? And question 10. What is the scope for connected platforms to avoid the need for specific TTS provision within consumer equipment by using cloud-based resources, for example, speech files on a central server delivered to the device as required?
Page 28.
Now, Annex 1, responding to this call for inputs. The issues. A1.1. Ofcom invites written views and comments on the issues raised in this document to be made by 5pm on the 8th of September 2014. It would be helpful if your response could include direct answers to the questions asked in this document, which are reproduced below. It would also help if you can explain why you hold your views and how Ofcom's proposals would impact on you. A1.2, Ofcom would welcome views from respondents on any of the issues raised in this paper or pertinent to the issue of accessibility to EPGs for people with visual impairments. For ease of reference, we've divided the specific questions we're posing in this document into two lists, those on which Ofcom would particularly welcome the views respectively of people with visual impairments, and those on which we would be glad to have the views of TV service providers, both subscription and free-to-air, manufacturers, technology providers, and others with relevant expertise. Now, moving on, questions on which Ofcom would particularly welcome the views of people with visual impairments. Question 1. Do respondents agree with Ofcom's initial assessment that apps for mobile devices have the potential to be useful for those people with visual impairments who feel confident using touchscreen technology and can afford a suitable mobile device? If not, why not? Question 2 again, do respondents agree with Ofcom's initial assessment that apps for mobile devices are less likely to meet the needs of the majority of visually impaired people who are 65 or over, both because they're less likely either to own a suitable mobile phone and because touchscreen apps present a number of actual and perceived barriers to use? If not, why not? Question 3. Do respondents consider that it would be reasonable for visually impaired viewers to pay more than sighted viewers for the ability to use EPGs or substitutes for the same purposes as sighted viewers? If so, why? And question 4. Do respondents agree with Ofcom's initial assessment that the speaking EPGs integrated into TVs and set-top boxes may be easier for people with visual impairments to use than touchscreen apps? If not, why not? Now, questions on which Ofcom would particularly welcome the views of TV service providers, both subscription and free-to-air, manufacturers, technology providers and others with relevant expertise. Question 5. Do paid TV service providers such as Sky, Virgin, TalkTalk and BTTV see additional obstacles that would prevent them from committing to including text-to-speech capabilities in the next planned upgrades to the receivers they offer to subscribers? If so, what are these obstacles? Absent regulation, would these obstacles make it possible on commercial grounds, make it impossible on commercial grounds to commit to the necessary investment? Question 6. If the cost of providing speech-enabled receivers to all those who subscribe to particular pay TV services would entail a substantial delay to the rollout of such receivers to all subscribers, would it be feasible, quicker and more cost-effective to offer suitable equipment first to viewers with visual impairments? Question 7. Do respondents consider that it would be reasonable to expect visually impaired viewers to pay extra for equipment that allows them to use EPGs or substitutes for the same purposes as sighted viewers? If so, why? Question 8. Do licensors such as Freesat and Freeview see obstacles to using their leverage to require manufacturers to incorporate speaking EPGs in future versions of products authorised to use their brands, such as Freetime and Freeview Connect? Question 9. What are the main types of costs that paid TV service providers would face in incorporating speaking EPG features into the next generation of their set-top boxes? And question 10. What's the scope for connected platforms to avoid the need for specific TTS provision within consumer equipment by using cloud-based resources, e.g. speech files on a central server delivered to the device as required? A1.3, if you want to discuss the issues and questions raised in this call for inputs or need advice on the appropriate form of response, please contact Jack Genovese at jacopo.genovese@ofcom.org.uk, that's the email address, or call 020-7981-3725. How to respond? A1.4, if you're able to respond via the online web form, please do so. This incorporates the cover sheet shown at the end of this annex. Completing the cover sheet helps us to speed up our processing of responses and to ascertain whether you would like any of your response kept confidential. A1.5, if you would like to phone in your response, you can leave a voicemail with your comments on 020-7981-3725.
Page 29.
A1.6. If you're responding by email, post or fax, you can download a copy of the cover sheet in Word or RTF format from the consultation section of our website at www.ofcom.org.uk/consult. A1.7. For larger responses, particularly those with supporting charts, tables or other data, please email jacopo.genovese@ofcom.org.uk, attaching your response in Microsoft Word format together with the cover sheet. A1.8, please put any parts of your response you consider should be kept confidential in a separate annex to your response and include your reasons why this part of your response should not be published. This can include information such as your personal background and experience. If you want your name, address, other contact details or job title to remain confidential, please provide them in your cover sheet only so that we don't have to edit your response.
Page 30.
A1.9. Responses may alternatively be posted or faxed to the address below, marked with the title of the consultation. It's Jacopo Genovese, 5th floor, Riverside House, 2A Southwark Bridge Road, London SE1 9HA, and fax number is 020-7981-3806. A1.10. If we're able to publish responses before the consultation period closes, this can help those individuals and organisations with limited resources or familiarity with the issues to respond in a more informed way. For these reasons, Ofcom encourages respondents to indicate on the cover sheet that Ofcom may publish their responses upon receipt rather than waiting until the period for responses has ended. A1.11, if you submit your response via the online web form or by email, we do not need a hard copy as well. Ofcom will acknowledge receipt of responses if they are submitted using the online web form, but not otherwise. Publication of responses. A1.12. We believe it's important for everyone interested in an issue to see the views expressed by consultation respondents. We'll therefore usually publish all responses on our website, ofcom.org.uk, ideally on receipt. If you think your response should be kept confidential, can you please specify what part or whether all your responses should be kept confidential and specify why? Please also place such parts in a separate annex. A1.13. If someone asks us to keep part or all of a response confidential, we will treat this request seriously and will try to respect this. But sometimes we will need to publish all responses, including those that are marked as confidential, in order to meet legal obligations. 1.14. Please also note that copyright and all other intellectual property in responses will be assumed to be licensed to Ofcom to use. Ofcom's approach on intellectual property rights is explained further on its website at ofcom.org.uk/about/account/disclaimer. Next steps. A1.15. Following the end of the response period, Ofcom intends to consider the responses with a view to deciding whether or not to consult on specific proposals. You can register to receive free email updates alerting you to the publications of relevant Ofcom documents. For more details, please see www.ofcom.org.uk/static/subscribe/select_list.htm.
Page 31.
Ofcom's consultation processes. A1.16. Ofcom has published the following 7 principles that it will follow for each public written consultation. Before the call for inputs, A1.17, where possible, we'll hold informal talks with people and organisations before announcing a big consultation to find out whether we're thinking in the right direction. If we don't have enough time to do this, we'll hold an open meeting to explain our proposals shortly after announcing the consultation. During the call for inputs, A1.18, we'll be clear about who we're seeking views from, why, on what questions and for how long. A1.19, we will make the document as short and simple as possible with a summary of no more than 2 pages. We'll try to make it as easy as possible to give us a written response. If the consultation is complicated, we may provide a shortened plain English guide for smaller organisations or individuals who would otherwise not be able to spare the time to share their views. A1.20, a person within Ofcom will be in charge of making sure that we follow our own guidelines and reach out to the largest number of people and organisations interested in the outcome of our decisions. Ofcom's consultation champion will also be the main person to contact with views on the way we run these processes. See paragraph A1.24 below. A1.21, if we're not able to follow one of these principles, we will explain why. After the call for inputs, A1.22, we think it's important for everyone interested in an issue to see the responses of others to the call for inputs. We would usually publish all the responses we've received on our website. In our statement, we will give reasons for our decisions and will give an account of how the views of those concerned help shape those decisions. A1.23, Ofcom seeks to ensure that responding to a call for inputs is as easy as possible. If you have any comments or suggestions on how Ofcom conducts the process, please call our help desk on 020 7981 3003 or email us at consult@ofcom.org.uk. We would particularly welcome thoughts on how Ofcom could more effectively seek the views of those groups or individuals, such as small businesses or particular types of residential consumers, who are less likely to give their opinions through a formal consultation.
Page 32.
A1.24, if you'd like to discuss these issues or Ofcom's consultation processes more generally, you can contact Graham Howell, Secretary to the Corporation, who is Ofcom's consultation champion. He's Graham Howell, Ofcom, Riverside House, 2A Southwark Bridge Road, London SE1 9HA. Telephone 020 7981 3601 or email graham.howell, two L's on the end of Howell, at ofcom.org.uk.
Page 33.
Now, the cover sheet for response to an Ofcom consultation. The cover sheet is a form to be filled in, and it starts off with basic details. Consultation title, 2, and then the name of the Ofcom contact, name of respondent, representing self or organisations, and address if not received by email. Confidentiality. Please tick below what part of your response you consider is confidential, giving your reasons why. Nothing. Whole response, part of the response, name, stroke, contact details, job title, or organisation only. Those are the five options. If there's no separate annex, which parts? If you want part of your response, your name or your organisation, not to be published, can Ofcom still publish a reference to the contents of your response, including, for any confidential parts, a general summary that doesn't disclose the specific information or enable you to be identified? And then declaration. I confirm that the correspondence supplied with this cover sheet is a formal consultation response that Ofcom can publish. However, in supplying this response, I understand that Ofcom may need to publish all responses, including those which are marked as confidential, in order to meet legal obligations. I have sent my response by email. Ofcom can disregard any standard email text about not disclosing email contents and attachments. Ofcom seeks to publish responses on receipt. If your response is non-confidential, in whole or in part, and you would prefer us to publish your response only once the consultation has ended, then please tick here. And there's a tick box. Then there's space for you to sign if it's a hard copy, and to print your name at the bottom. That completes the reading of this document. Speaking TV programme guides, would they help people with visual impairments and are they feasible? It's the call for inputs document, publication date 10th of July 2014, and the closing date for responses is the 8th of September 2014. Thank you for listening.